In Motion by Bronwyn Malden, read by the author. This is the first story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. When it hit, Bill dropped his highball glass and stumbled toward his son's room. Isaiah lay crying, unprotected, on his small, 5-year-old size bed. Bill lifted him up and clenched him to his chest as the world bounced and rumbled beneath his feet. It should have been over already. Bill braced himself against the bedroom door frame, watching a glow-in-the-dark mobile of planets and stars sway in a nauseating rhythm out of sync with the earthquake. The earth stopped moving long before the mobile did. Heart pounding, Isaiah still in his arms, Bill ran to the den and snapped on the television. No power. Rushing into the kitchen, he nearly slipped on broken glass in his leather slippers. Isaiah squirmed in Bill's tight grasp. He wanted warmth and comfort now, not his father's clumsy strength. "No, son," Bill said, misunderstanding. "You can't get down. You'll hurt yourself." Bill rummaged blindly through a drawer with one hand until he found a battered old Walkman. He sat down on the sofa, holding Isaiah in his lap with one hand. He clicked on the radio and held one headphone to his ear. The batteries were still good. With trembling hands, he turned the dial, trying to remember the location of pre-programmed stations he listened to in his car. Finally, he heard the voices of callers making preliminary guesses about magnitude, 5, 6, and up. Someone reminded listeners to turn off the gas. Another told them not to light candles. Bill reached for the Crown Royal bottle and took a long drink. Maybe this would buy him time. Monahan and Brownlow would have to cancel the early meeting tomorrow. His father's grip loosened. Isaiah jumped down. "Mommy!" he cried, running for their bedroom door. Helen! How could he have forgotten her? Bill ran to the bedroom. "Helen!" Why was he whispering? Perhaps because it was so very dark without streetlights streaming in through cracks in the curtains. "Helen!" he shouted. No answer. He could barely make out her shape in the bed as his eyes slowly adjusted to the dark. No, it was much bigger than Helen. It was the size of the tall bookshelf beside the bed, in the shape of a pile of 100 favorite books. At the emergency shelter, the staff were as kind as they were skilled, protecting Bill and his son from prying reporters and talk show producers. When he sat at a picnic bench behind the shelter for hours, unable to move, they cared for Isaiah, along with a shrinking number of other children. In his growing silence, Bill became obsessed with one question. Was he marked by God, or had he been abandoned? If he could find the answer, then he would know what to do next. Without it, he was frozen in place, unsure which way to step. The day the shelter closed its doors, a kind woman with a thin, sad face drove Bill and Isaiah back to their home. Bill stood on the front porch with a duffel bag filled with canned goods, blankets, and lightly used clothing. Isaiah clutched his other hand. They waved to the kind woman as she drove away. But Bill did not unlock the front door. Instead, he walked around to the back and put Isaiah in the sandbox to play. It was safer here than inside. The next day, Bill ventured into his house long enough to dig up gear from the back of a closet. Sleeping bags, tent, a cook stove, and 2 unopened Crown Royal bottles. He set up camp for himself and his son in the backyard, as far as he could from the house and the mistakes that had taken his wife from him. Each night, Bill sat watch. He had failed his wife, but he would keep his son from the kinds of harm that God could bring down without warning on the innocent and guilty alike. When the social worker arrived with a court order, Bill was passed out on the back stoop. Isaiah was filthy and thin, with a hungry look in his eyes. Bill hadn't been able to let him go to school for nearly a year, even though he knew he should have. The social worker woke Bill up and showed him papers. They were signed by judges and county officials, but he knew this was God's work, too. He was among the guilty, and such a man as he was not to be entrusted with the life of a child. With no one to watch over, Bill's sleepless nights became too terrible to live through. The more he drank, the more the angry voices chided him from all sides. Even worse were his dreams when he finally slept. One night, as the voices clamored in his head, his wife's ghost appeared. "Helen," Bill said softly to the apparition hovering before him. She was as whole as she had been in life, her beautiful face marred only by a frown. Helen spoke, but he could not hear her. Bill spread a blanket for her on the ground beside him. She sat down and gestured to the night sky, glowing the hazy purple of reflected city lights. She pointed to the tall cedar soaring above them, to the home they'd shared together, to him. Her brow furrowed with the effort. Bill wept as he watched her mouth move in earnest lamentations he could not hear. Then, suddenly, Helen took Bill by the shoulders and shouted, "Where are the others?" Her pain gave her strength to make her voice heard by the living. Startled, Bill asked, "What others?" "I have searched heaven and hell, but I cannot find the others who died with me in the earthquake," she said. "I am lonely, and I have no one with whom to share my grief." Bill looked down, unable to meet her eyes. This was the unfair burden God had given him to bear. "No, my love," Bill whispered. "You were the only one." Cash Money by Bronwyn Malden. Read by the author. This is the second story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. Pops maneuvered his shopping cart around behind the Calvin building. He had to get to the dumpsters before they were on the sidewalk. Once there, the contents were city property. After securing the wheels with a pair of 2x4s, Pop stood on the cart to lean into the dumpster. The warm stink from the dregs of fermenting sugary drinks hit him like the smell of money. Pops used an efficient 2-stroke method. Recyclables and edibles into the cart, useless garbage to the side. 2 dumpsters later, the cart was overbrimming. Pops headed for a nearby city park to sort in private. All that work had given him an appetite, so he started with the fast food bags, cleanest ones, first. 1 sack had been folded closed with the care a mother might give to her child's lunch. Pops salivated with anticipation as he opened it. But instead of food, there was cash. The kind of cash money a man like him wouldn't see in a lifetime. Pops crumpled the bag shut in his fist. His heart pounded. A wad of Benjamins like that could get a man killed. Pops closed his eyes and imagined himself at a high-class bar buying rounds, raising a glass with a toast. Other fantasies flooded in. He bought an ice cream for his little boy, a diamond ring for his beautiful wife, except his wife was dead, and his son was all grown up and gone. Maybe the money was a hallucination, too. A man in his condition saw a lot of things that later gave up on themselves. He unfolded the sack and peered in. He reached inside to count the 20s and 50s. $2,700. Underneath, a photo ID card for Delia Johnson at the Calvin Company. Pops looked up. From his park bench, he could see the top of the Calvin building. I'm just an old drunk, Pops told himself. How can I be expected to do the right thing? Who would expect him to do the right thing? Nobody. And as soon as they got a whiff of cash on him, they'd sneak up in the middle of the night, bash in his head, and take it. Pops stood, wavering unsteadily on his feet. God, he needed a drink. He could leave it here. Let someone else find the money and get killed for it. Problem was, he'd seen a name. And a face. Pops sighed and began pushing his cart back to the Calvin building. Pops parked out front. He took the ID in one hand, the sack of money in the other, and walked in the door. "Sir, you can't come in here." A woman in business clothes approached, followed quickly by a security guard. "I'm here to see Delia Johnson." Pops planted his feet wide on the carpet. The guard shouted, "Out! Now!" "I'm here to see Delia Johnson," Pops said, waving the ID at them. The woman put a hand on Pop's shoulder. "Why do you want to see Miss Johnson?" She spoke gently to make up for the guard. She hated the way he was such an ass to everyone. "I have something for her." The guard reached for the sack. "I'll take it." Pop stepped backward. He couldn't trust anyone. "I'm here to see Delia Johnson," he said. "Okay," said the woman. The old guy was stubborn, but he seemed purposeful, not crazy. "Give me the ID, and I'll take it to Miss Johnson. We'll see what she says." Maybe Delia knew the recycle man. These days, you never could be sure. Pops hesitated. Even Delia Johnson, who worked at the big fat Calvin Company, would know if she was missing $2,700. He handed over the ID. "I want to see Delia Johnson." The guard and the woman exchanged a hard look. "All right," the guard said. The woman took the ID. "Why don't you wait outside?" she said. Purpose or not, he was truly ripe. Pops wanted nothing more than to get out before the walls collapsed in on him, but he had to see this through. The woman went up the elevator while the guard stood by the door, giving Pops the stink eye. When the elevator returned, a short Latina stepped out alone. She had long, dark hair and thick tortoiseshell glasses. "How did you get my ID?" she asked. She looked right into the bum's eyes to show that he couldn't scare her. Pastor Tony wanted her church to start up some kind of homeless shelter, but Delia would have none of it. They couldn't have men like this stinking up the house of the Lord. Pop stared back. She looked like the photo. "You're Delia Johnson?"
"Yes."
Pops held out the sack. "I found this in the dumpster." Delia's face went white as the sack. She recognized it instantly, and her heart lurched forward. How did it get into the dumpster? She thought she'd left it locked in her desk. Delia's hands shook as she took the sack from him. It gave off the metallic, shameful smell of money. Delia had hated begging from her brothers and sisters, but there hadn't been a choice. Between them, they'd put together enough to cover her mortgage. She didn't know what she would do next month. Pops turned to leave. He needed a drink. Bad. Delia said,
"Hold on."
She was counting the money. Pops felt his face get hot. "It's all there," he said. Delia looked at him with surprise. It was.
"Why didn't you take it?"
Pops pointed to the ID. "I saw your face. I knew your name." Delia counted out 5 $20 bills. She shoved them into his palm. "I can't," Pops said.
"You must."
"Don't you need it?" Pops asked. Delia nodded. She didn't know where she'd find another $100. She needed the money more than anything. But God and Pastor Tony would want her to do right, by a man who'd done right by her. Breakfast by Bronwyn Maldon, read by the author. This is the third story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. Pops awoke on pavement. A rock on the sidewalk had burrowed into his cheek. He rolled over onto his back. Eyes closed, he tested himself for injuries. One fist opened and closed, then the other. He stretched out his right arm, then his left. Knees and ankles popped as he bent and unbent his legs. His head ached, as always. At least he still had his shoes. Pops opened his eyes and saw a ceiling, which gave him a start. Then he noticed a patch of sunshine. He pushed himself upright to rest against the wall. He must have been mighty drunk to fall asleep so far from his vacant lot. More drunk than he would have had money for. He closed his eyes, trying to remember. Something shifted beside him, and Pops jerked away. A young man lay there, muttering in his sleep. He had soft black curls, full pale lips, and long eyelashes. A thick scar ran along the edge of his hairline. Young man? A boy, really, who must have shared his stash. Pops wondered what he'd given in return. There was no free lunch on the streets any more than in the world of high finance. Even the soup kitchens expected you to pray to their god in return. Pops needed to figure out where he was and how to get back to his vacant lot under the freeway. He was safer there, in the wide open. If the bus had been involved, he could be anywhere in the city. If a car, he could be almost anywhere in the world. Up the street, a group of men and women stood at a bus stop. Latinos, with a few white folks, too. Signs on the shops were in a mix of mostly English and a little Spanish. At least he was still in L.A. "Morning, Pops." Pops turned. The young man smiled, happy that Pops had stayed after all. "Let's get breakfast," he said. Pops frowned. "Ain't got money." The young man shook his head. "Don't worry, I know somebody." He stood, but got hit by the wobbles. He leaned into the wall for balance. Pops put a hand on the young man's arm. "Steady on, son," he said. The weight of the old man's hand felt reassuring. "Thanks," he said. Pops and the young man walked side by side up the city street, with other people making their way to the places they had to be all day. Pops finally saw a street sign, York Boulevard. He tried to remember where the hell York was. The young man felt warmed by the rising sun and by the old man's presence at his side. He could imagine the two of them roaming the country together, taking their meals and sleeping side by side in nooks and crannies most people didn't know existed. Pops was an educated man. He imagined sitting by a campfire, listening to Pops tell yet another of the books he'd read, just like he had last night. Pops followed the young man up an alley. They approached the back door of a shop that was redolent with the smell of corn and chili. Pop's mouth watered like one of Pavlov's dogs. He stood a little ways back while the young man knocked on a screen door. An old woman with long gray hair and a flowered apron over her clothes opened the door. "Hola, Maria," the young man said. "Cómo está?" Maria was overjoyed to see her grandson again after so many weeks. At the same time, the crack in her heart broke open a little wider. How was it Miguel knew to return here, but didn't know who she was? Couldn't remember the countless childhood days and nights he'd spent here in the family restaurant.
Hola, ¿tienes hambre?
Sí, he said. We're both hungry. Maria looked the old wino up and down, repressing the urge to cross herself. He was filthy, emaciated, and he stank. She couldn't let him inside. Pops knew that look in her eyes. He should go. But the smell of food stilled his legs. This old woman was going to feed them. Sit down, Maria said, gesturing to some white plastic chairs behind the shop. Pops and the young man sat. Maria returned from the restaurant with two plates piled high with flatbread, beans, and cabbage.
Pupusas, Miguel said with delight. My favorite! How did you know?
Maria watched the two men shovel food into their mouths, barely stopping to chew. Her own beloved Miguel was becoming one of these street people, and she couldn't stop it. So she vowed to continue feeding him and these filthy old men he brought with him, just to keep Miguel coming back. Perhaps one day he would remember. Pops ate half of what was on his plate before he had to stop. He'd be lucky to keep that much down. Miguel noticed Pops wasn't eating.
Maria, he said, could you bring us coffee and a takeaway bag?
Tears filled her eyes as she went back into the restaurant. When she was gone, Pops said, thanks for the food. Miguel said,
sure thing, Dad.
Pops stood abruptly, dropping the plate. It shattered, splattering food around their feet. The young man knelt.
I'll take care of it, Dad.
He swept the food into little piles, rubbing the skin of his fingers open on the rough pavement.
Who are you? Pops said. Your son, Isaiah.
Pops shook his head.
The young man stood. We haven't seen each other since social services took me away after the earthquake, he said. It's like you said last night. We're so lucky to have found each other.
Maria stepped out the screen door, paper cups of coffee in hand.
You are not my son, Pops turned and ran.
He didn't look anything like Isaiah. Miguel ran after him.
Dad, he shouted, God has brought us together.
The old woman cried out,
Miguel!
But her grandson was gone again. That was part one of The Streetwise Cycle by Bronwyn Malden. The Streetwise Cycle is a collection of 9 interconnected short stories. You can listen to the rest of the podcast, read the stories, or share your thoughts with the author online at streetwisecycle.com.